Cheers, everybody. I want to talk to you real fast about Reckless Brewing Company, our sponsor. Our first real main sponsor, who lets us do cool things like Nerd Out Nights. If you're in the area of Bethlehem, New Hampshire, show up and hang out with us, play some games. I'm running a West Marches-style Frost Maiden campaign, so get in there, make a character, have fun with us, and try the amazing food that I get to have a huge part in making, and I'm honored to do so because it is a fantastic menu, and the beer, which I'm told is probably okay, but Stephen and Jeremy all know that's their thing. Nah, it's really good. It's great beer. Try out the sour, party in your mouth. Ooh, it is a party in your mouth for sure. Anyway, show up at Reckless and have a good time.
Talk of terrifying foes and truly tremendous luminary tufts, I want to make a brief recommendation for y'all. Now, in this time of crystal network splendors, it can be hard to pull your eyes from the projectors. And remember to pick up a good book. Now, reading is a great thing. There's only so many stories I can tell, and those who don't dare delve into the written word are missing out on so, so many more. So do yourselves a favor and swing by the book den near the tail end of the trade discount. I've visited the proprietor, Penny, many a time, and she's always happy to make a text recommendation that fits my wants and needs. Whether you're looking for a leisure, learning, or a little wizardry, there's a little reason for you to get yourself to the book den. And don't be fooled by its humble size. Either this shop has got it all. The selection of books inside those walls is just outrageous. I mean, suspiciously. So, in fact, like, seriously, what's going on in there?
Penny got that advertising money.
Got the advertising money. She made a friend in high places, I know. Oh, man. Gentlemen. What the fuck?
Yeah, it's...
We're back.
It's been, what, 3 weeks?
For us, it's been 3 weeks, yeah.
It's going to be a weird episode, everybody, because we're here 3 weeks. We have not recorded. We all forgot how to do this. This happens every time. I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Dude.
I'm also halfway through a double at work, and I've got to hit a time limit here to get back for an 18-top to go before they get into the kitchen. So it's a wild ride today, gentlemen.
Dude, last Sunday, I opened up... was episode 98.
Oh, yeah.
To get it finalized, ready for release on Monday. And I had not opened up a single file in about 2.5 weeks.
Dude, yeah. It's crazy.
It was the trippiest thing. It took me so long.
And now we're behind. Or not behind, but we're like...
We're current with the pants people.
We're
current with the pants people.
But you know what?
We're like, under the gun.
I miss this. I'm so excited to get back to it. Like, this is so awesome. This is so awesome. But we got to talk because those 2 weeks at least, some stuff went down for one of us.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell me about your 2-week vacation there, Jeremy Wolf?
Oh, it's great. I didn't see Steven for an entire 2 weeks.
Dude, oh, it was awesome.
It was great.
Oh, poor Germany, though.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes, Germany had to endure... dumb American for a little while.
Did you hear about the Prague killings?
No.
Strangled by a ponytail, they say.
Wow. Yeah.
Just keeps happening.
So, pretty big city. Probably happens. I don't know about frequently.
Steven, how was your trip?
It was really, really good. There was a lot of beer and a lot of castles.
Oh,
and
I love that second thing.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff in between. We hit Munich Oktoberfest, which was a bucket list item. I don't even know where to begin. Maybe I'll begin with my second favorite stop.
Ooh.
Which was the Weltenberger Abbey.
Ooh, in, baby.
Man, I'm like, we went so many places that I forget where everything was. This was in Germany.
Because you were in 3 different countries, right?
Yeah, we landed in Prague, spent a couple days there. Then we traveled to Germany. Me and David's buddy, who we went to kindergarten with, is stationed there. So that was kind of our home base. And we, you know, did day trips from there. We did a night in Salzburg, Austria. And then we hit Prague again on our way out to fly now, out.
Just remind me again, because I am an idiot with geography. Which country is Prague in?
In the Czech Republic.
That's it. Okay, cool, yeah. Cool, cool. Nice.
Yeah. So I started talking about Weltenberger because I brought one of my favorite beers from there to share. I mean, you're welcome to try some, David, but I know you won't like it.
Yeah, no, no.
So I brought this to share with my buddy Jeremy.
Oh, yeah. You got the Hooley Forge.
The Hooley Forge bottle opener.
Hell, what an honor.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds good.
So
that sounds good.
This is the oldest monastic brewery in the world. In 2050, they'll be turning 1,000 years old.
Fucking wild.
Yeah.
Holy wild. Crap.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
What? David, you got to wait to cheers until we all have liquid.
I have my halfway through a double rock star, so I'll cheers with you guys with that.
So one thing that I learned in Germany, you know, when you cheers in German, it's Prost. And if you do that and then you break eye contact before you sip, you have like, it's supposed to be like 5 or 7 years of bad sex.
Okay, so how did, how do we do that with three people?
Yeah, you kind of do like a little looky back and forth.
Locking eyes, not the sex part.
All right.
There it is.
Let's all do this together. Ready?
Are we saying Prost?
Prost.
Prost. Okay.
Prost.
Prost. Prost, gentlemen.
And then you got to keep eye contact with somebody.
I know. It's not hard with you, David.
Eyebrows.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is their Bock. I tried a couple other beers there, of course. Mm. And I had to bring some of this back. It was just, oh my goodness, so delicious. The brewery, the monastery is right on like this big bend in the Danube River. It's like picturesque. And we had a beautiful lunch there. I got a smoked salmon and I was expecting like a salmon fillet. Mm. No, head to tail, full ass smoked salmon. So I'm sitting there with, you know, a half a liter of this Bock and the smoked salmon in front of me. And I didn't want to leave.
So would you say that their Bock is worse than their bites?
Shit.
God. And we're back,
David,
folks.
Fucking ruined it. Ruined it. No, the Bock is great, and the bites were almost as great.
Okay. Do you have a second favorite play or first favorite place? You said second, right?
First was, it was Munich Oktoberfest.
Oh, right, of course. Yeah. Yes. Bucket list item, hell yeah.
Bucket list item, 5 liters of beer for me. Was truly incredible. And we didn't even get around the fest too much. We saw maybe a quarter of the whole grounds.
Wow.
And we had thought about doing another day originally when we were arriving. We were like, oh yeah, we'll do, you know, today and then we'll come back for a little bit tomorrow. But I got my fill. Man, we went opening day and it was like,
ooh,
it was butt to butt. There was not an inch to move and you're trying to like move through this crowd. It took us like an hour to find a table. But it was,
if I know you at all, that sounds like your personal hell.
Well, see, normally, yeah, I normally don't like something that's like super crowded like that, but where I thought I was only going to go the one day,
mm-hmm.
I really wanted it to be the biggest, craziest, most eventful day.
Fair.
'Cause then I saw like pictures and videos from later throughout the week and there were like empty tables.
Wow.
And I'm like, God, no, I don't want empty tables at Oktoberfest. I want just like butt to butt, shoulder to shoulder. There was no room to move. And it was fantastic.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So you really just had to gird your loins and face the Munich.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't even think you're listening. I think you're just coming up with shitty puns.
I heard Munich and I was like, he can fill me in later. I'm going to start searching the mental web, as it were.
But I'm very glad to be back. Today's Thursday. We got back on Monday, so re-entry is going pretty well.
Nice.
Happy to be back at work. You know, I guess as happy as, you know, a working person can be. And very, very happy to be back with my friends playing this fucking game that we all love.
Hell yeah.
Hell yes.
Oh, before we continue, I have new dice I need to bless.
Oh, shit.
Real quick. Ooh.
Yes.
Okay.
So 2 weeks ago was my birthday, and our dear friend Meglin got me a brand new Malachite dice set.
Malachite.
They look like green tigers.
They do. They do. It's like really cool green with a bunch of black stripes. I love them.
Oh, man.
And I'm going to bless them real quick because these will be my primaries going forward.
Yes.
Bless them in the guns of heaven.
Oh, that's like a double bless.
It's like a double bless right there, man.
And we bless. Okay.
Ooh, nice.
Be blessed, Jeremy. Be blessed.
Proceed with the shit show.
Well, I'm thinking if you have this beautiful new dice, then maybe you don't need payout. You want to just skip that part? Skip payout?
That's fair.
Who needs rewards?
You want to just skip this session? Yeah.
Heroic deeds.
I'm not doing this for money.
Yeah, exactly. Like a real hero doesn't do it for money, Steven. But I guess we'll do payout. I just clicked the thing and they all went away. There he is. Let's do payout. Before we get into this, let's give you guys your well-due money real quick here. Your base pay for the Zinda Arc is 300 gold each.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right.
That's your base. For the footage you had of the Diva Luma interrogation, it's a bonus 200 gold each.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was big.
Nice.
That you showed in that footage was revealed that you're the ones that solved the mystery. They also would have caught like parts of the combat, you know, at least the parts that were in the room. You guys kind of flashing out there, but they know from there the combat succeeded. That's some good notoriety. And your sponsors were very happy. In your case, Blanche, you don't really have a sponsor, so it's again, just the Golden Bay. You'll be right there. This is Blanche of the Golden Bay. Let's get some Golden Bay fish up in here, you know? Still works. Now your money's going right to Jean and Ledoux's pockets.
Oh, my goodness. That's so trippy.
Speaking of the Golden Bay, base pay for the Golden Bay arc, not from actually any sponsors, because this wasn't really very large in the footage. There's not a lot of people that want to hear about what's going on in the Golden Bay, right? No one cares what's happening in the Golden Bay. They like you. They like John. But Turtles as a whole aren't super popular still. They're not like, it's not that exciting to know what's happening in their sort of personal lives. But from Ledoux, as you kind of leave, as you're about to head off on this journey, from the coffers of the Golden Bay, they give you, again, 200 gold each. So a grand
Golden
total,
Bay pay.
700 Hell gold yeah. for each of you.
Nice.
Hey, where's Blanche at?
Well, I started with 391, so okay. We doing okay.
Because I haven't spent too much. I'd be at 1,500.
Nice.
Not bad.
Nice.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Time to start shopping.
I'm going to splurge on something stupid.
Surprise, this is a shopping episode.
It is going to be a weird episode. not so much shopping for goods, but shopping for information. For you have just entered the book den. This is going to be a strange one. Tonight, despite the sort of goofy atmosphere we're starting things off with, I think we're going to see the revelation of many huge sort of story and world-spanning mysteries here. I think we're going to learn a lot of things because Fibro and Arhalon are onto something and they want to see if you kind of catch up. The information you're gathering here can help them in the last sort of bits of their research here. So what do they know already? And what are they going to learn? In order to figure that out, you have to get a few books for them. A button for anyone who remembers a single book that you have to get from this.
Nope.
Okay. Come on.
I'm going to know when you say
single
it.
Single book.
I can't.
Come on.
I
just
can't.
One. All right. You have a list, if I ever wrote it. So like, you can just hand it over. I'm not going to make you be like, okay, now memory, what's the book called? You say the wrong title and give you the wrong book and we have to do this again.
Right.
We're not doing that. The books you need are Fai Mimoun's autobiography, Climbing the Mountain.
That's the one. Button,
Fai
please.
Mimoun. Yeah. Of course.
That's what I meant to say.
Hey, what? Where have you heard the name Fai Mimoun before? I'll give you a button for that.
Oh, I know that
Fai
one.
Fai Mimoun, yeah, that's the, she's the teapot, isn't she?
No.
No, it's her the at the booth.
No. What booth?
Wait, which?
Fai Mimoun.
Subsunko.
That is from Subsunko.
Yeah.
Ooh. Who was that in Subsunko's lore?
Wasn't Fai Mimoun the one that planted all the...
That's close enough.
Planted all the...
That's close enough.
The lollipop flowers.
That's close enough. I'll give you it to you. Fai Mimoun is actually male, though. Fai Mimoun is a figure in Subsunko lore who was known as a Mizir Drakan. because Fa Mai Moon, during a time of strife where enemies were basically moving into the Valley of Zantini, before it was a valley, Fa Mai Moon climbed to the top of this mountain that's in the midst of Zantini, called upon the spirits of the land, and in this act of incredible sort of miraculous power, drew forth the great wall of mountains that closed the valley off from the outside world, protecting them from invaders and making it the safe place that it is now. And in, when this happened, actually, it was noted in a book that Arhulan read, the Laupop flowers that glow along the mountains appeared then as part of this miracle. Take a button.
Okay. Yay.
Sir. This is a button episode, because there's going to be a lot of me asking you questions of things that have already happened and put pieces together. And if you get anything right, I'm giving you buttons. I'm going crazy tonight. Because next episode is episode 100.
Ooh.
You better get those up and, or get those buttons. Gentlemen, I'm going to light episode 100 on fire. Got me? Got me? Get your buttons.
I am excited for episode 100. I'm sad to say that I probably won't go into it with many buttons, but we'll see what happens.
I was going to say, if this button episode is based on memory.
The next book is not a book, but rather a scroll called Song of Our Deliverance. It is a God's Breath sort of based scroll. Something very old from their culture, something very rare. There's a book called Tears of the Dragon, which is a book, an Amazon book about the creation of the Shrine of Storms, and a book called Dragon Bones, which is the tales of origins of Dialongon's great serpent bridges.
Yeah, Tears of the Dragon was the one that I was thinking of, but couldn't exactly get the words out. Yeah.
And lastly, there is the Xena personally asked for the sequel to the romantic novel Moondust called The Moon in My Hands. So, that'll make Xena happy. There's a nice hot goat waiting for you. Way too hot, actually.
Ooh, yum.
Yummy.
Wait.
Temperature hot, or is this like a sexy goat?
Both.
Sweet.
So you walk in, you got your list, you walk into this place, and you immediately see this very small room, bookshelves sort of lining around it, there's stairs moving up, they're sort of blocked off, there's a desk, and behind it, sort of a door leading into some back room you can't really see, but you have to assume it's pretty small. The shop itself is a pretty small little bookshop, kind of nestled between larger structures on the sort of end of the trade disc all here. And behind the desk, you see an elven woman. Small frame with kind, curious eyes, wearing big hoop earrings, a formal blouse, and a knee-length sort of swishing skirt. She introduces herself, you know, says, welcome to the book den, and as you, as she kind of takes in, sort of, you know, curiously looks over you, maybe doesn't recognize you, and perhaps she knows her usual clientele, she continues.
This is the book den, your one-stop shop for all things literary. We have writing utensils, paper, and books. Oh, so many beautiful books. And a handful of scrolls, I think.
I love that I don't have to roleplay at all.
Yeah, that's really good voice work, David.
Thank you. Meg, thank you so much again. You see, she kind of like steps around the counter, maybe like, she almost has this way of like her nose sort of sniffs at the air. And she gets this kind of excited, almost electric sort of energy. She kind of moves around the counter, kind of stepping sort of gracefully towards you, and she sort of continues her introduction.
Most people just call me Penny. I run this place, as I just love books. Can't get enough of them. I know quite a bit about books, so if you have any questions, please let me know.
Thank you, Penny. Well met. We have a list, actually, of books we are seeking. And Blanche hands over the list.
She snaps it over, takes the list in, kind of reading it over, eyes flickering. And keep in mind, too, you have books to trade in as well. I won't make you go over that list, but there are a number of books that Xena had that you can trade in to borrow for this, so it's not going to cost you anything to get these books out. That's kind of my whole plan. She's just reading over this list, and immediately her eyes kind of, she kind of cocks her head a little bit, and she smiles this kind of warm smile as if she recognizes the handwriting. And her eyes look back to you, both of you, and she says,
are you friends with Fibro? He's been one of my best customers.
How many of these do you have?
Fucking cool.
I have so many of these. Dude, Meg, load me up.
It's going to be...
I'm not even going to use half of them, but it's amazing.
Yes, we know Fibro quite well. Don't you, Jules?
Fibro is such a dear. I've never met a more avid reader. Besides myself, of course.
It's very excited.
Yeah, you're not telling me anything I didn't know already. I'd be shocked if he wasn't in here all the time.
And that actually just kind of, again, cocks her head and says,
Where is Fibro anyway? I haven't seen him in a while.
Did they come with us, or did they...
No. Fibro sent us on this particular chore. He has a notion that, well, he wants to see if we can figure out the same thing that he figured out.
How nice.
I love this so much. This is awesome.
So, do you think you can help us with these books? We have some to trade in.
Yes.
Yes. This is the best. This is the absolute
great,
best.
Great sounds, poor execution, David.
Wait, hang on. Let me... You said that.
You have a book to show me?
Very excited. Eyes wide.
Yes. Let me pull them out. And Blanche grabs the...
You know,
the...
I was just... Oh, a book.
She sees the book come out.
Do we have anything of value here in these books?
May I see what you have?
Do you hand them over?
I feel like I already handed them over.
I wanted to use that line.
I feel like there's a DM somewhere screwing up this whole dialogue.
I'm slaying. This is awesome. I'm having the best time right now.
This is going to be a goddamn mess to edit. Oh my fucking god.
Oh man, what do I say here? Hang on. What was the last question? Whether these are worth something?
Yeah, Blanche is curious if any of the books are, you know, valuable.
And have you already handed the list over?
Yes.
Okay.
So she has the list and the books we got from Xena.
That's wonderful.
She sees one title.
Yes, that top book is called Wonderful.
She kind of snatches them up from you and sort of looking over them very excitedly, nodding, looks at your list and then just says,
I might have something in the back. Give me a moment.
And she nods and sort of slips out of the room. You hear, like, I think the door, she kind of closes the back door, and, like, you hear kind of she opens the back door of the office for one thing, behind the desk, and you kind of look and you see a very sparse-looking kind of office, right? You see a door leading out the back room, and nothing in the, at least on this wall that you can see, kind of goes in sort of under the stairs, and as the door closes, you kind of hear, like, maybe a little bit of sort of noise, like something's moving around in there. You're like, what the? And maybe, like, from far off, you hear, like, some, like, a voice sort of echoing out. Just like,
Dewey, get off the ladder.
Is there a whole other person in there? That was tiny. And you hear nothing for some time. So she's going around, she's getting those books for you. You maybe have a moment up here in this room. And Blanche, you're probably scanning these shelves. You can immediately see there are, of course, supplies for wizards. You'll find sort of arcane inks and quills and scrolls you could use to write down things. Pre-done scrolls, so you can like go and buy yourself maybe a couple spells if you want to. You got that new payout, so maybe Blanche is doing a little window shopping. She's kind of looking around and yum, yum, yum. Is that a fireball scroll I see? You know, kind of like that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. You suddenly realize, weirdly, that you're not alone in this shop. Sort of coming out from behind one of the bookshelves, you're surprised this form, you didn't notice it earlier. Maybe they're crouching very low because they are very, very, very tall. This incredibly tall man looking down at you with these beautiful, radiant blue eyes and sort of bearing just this grotesque, horrid, putrid sham of a ponytail.
Oh, I was about to say, David, is that you?
It one third of the way is. If you guys remember, there's a character the book den called Stephen J. Davids. So I need you, hang on, I need you to help voice this Eldritch Horror with
Holy
me.
Holy shit. Oh,
no, I'm going to start off a sentence. You guys are going to jump in. Okay? Ready? You got this? We're all doing this together.
No.
You got this. Ready?
It's going to be bad.
Ready?
Let's try it.
Hello. My name is Stephen J. Davis. Oh, this is awesome.
This is the most awkward moment of my life.
I love this so much.
I need more beer.
Yeah.
He just stares through you with these wide, wonderfully blue eyes. You're lost and they're hypnotic. You feel warm, you feel at home. like you're enveloped in a beautiful hug.
Oh, so Stephen J. David's got your eyes.
Yeah, Dodoy. Thank you, by the way.
Also has blue eyes, by the way.
Huh?
Yeah. Huh?
I said, I also have blue eyes, by the way.
Yeah, but they look like gray next to me. Let's be straight here. And so we can avoid having to do that all the time. Stephen J. David waves a hand, just says, Goodbye. And leaves.
And he bites his own tongue off and leaves.
Stephen, why did we just take part in that?
In the book.
We could have said no. We could have said no.
You're not getting a button for that. In the books, Stephen J. David is actually an author that there's like basically a side quest where they can join you. They were looking for some inspiration. They can join you on some quests and sort of hang out. And if they see something really impressive from you, then you essentially fulfill their sort of objective as they can go and write about your exploits. I would do that, but I don't want to make us do this all the time. Because I really want to have the amalgamated voice for this monstrosity.
You can't do
of a human.
You can't do any more of that.
Okay, all right. He leaves. He bangs his head on the door because he's as tall as Jeremy.
This is true.
It's true. Okay. You see that soon after this very strange encounter, you're more sliding in that back small room. After it sort of settles, seems to settle, the door opens and Penny comes out with just an armful of books. One on top actually is not a book. It is, again, a scroll. Looks very old and weathered. And like the way she's handling these, you can see it's like these are precious, precious books. I think she almost looked nervous, like doesn't want her to hand them over to you. But, you know, she's thinking, maybe she's like looking over at that paper, the list is on top. It's just looking at the handwriting and kind of nodding like, well, if it's fibro. But she moves over and she will say something pertaining to how I'm going to give you these books, maybe.
Something that sounds kind of like... Wait,
no, we got this.
Here's what I found.
Ooh!
Hey, that's the perfect line.
Nice.
In fact, she's just even more excited. She's like this.
Oh, let me tell you what I know.
Yeah. But no, okay. It doesn't work as well.
Yeah, tell me what you know. What did you find?
Let me tell you what I know.
Uh-huh. Yes, I'm waiting.
And then she hands the books and says,
here's what I found.
Okay.
Thank you. How did you find these all so quick? Your office looks quite sparse back there.
I don't appreciate your tone.
I didn't mean to offend. I'm just impressed at your organizational abilities, I suppose.
How nice.
Penny, you said, right? How long has the how long has your shop been here, Penny?
I surprisingly don't know much about that.
You don't know how long your shop has been here. Well, how long have you been the proprietor of it?
No.
Jules walks up to Penny and, like, pokes her forehead. Are you real?
Sorry. No.
No, the fuck she says here. That. She says that, and her eyes close and open, and you see reptilian eyes.
Oh, God. She's a lizard man.
Jeez.
For a brief moment, like a glamour is starting to come, and she smiles this sort of like, you know, kind of almost challenge of a smile. But she's into the books. Jeez. Slides them right across to you.
Okay. Well, are we supposing this is a even exchange of books here?
I do like that.
Okay. That, I mean, that's agreeable to us, isn't it, Jules?
Yeah, sure.
Now, if we have any issues with these books, what is your return policy like?
Have a great day.
Wow.
She's already walking away. Wow. She's got one of your books, one of your new books in hand. Very excited. She's got the one. It's the one about brewing tea. It's a huge, dense book, and she looks way too excited about this book. That's like a solid like foot wide. It's huge. She sort of drops on the desk with a whoom and folds it open.
Hey, it's fall. I get it. I can actually feel it in my throat right now. I could use some tea.
She kind of looks up at you again as if she's surprised you're still here and says,
thanks for stopping by.
Yes, thank you for your hospitality.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Stop by any time.
And like she's like not looking at this point, her nose is straight down the book, and she says that and kind of waves. And she's like the moment there where she kind of seemed like almost like she got a little, you know, on edge. But then she jumped right back to full friendly. And she seemed like this went well. You're walking out like you don't really know, but she seems very pleased to have these new books in hand. So
over her shoulder, Blanche says, "Okay, we might."
Oh my gosh. And with that, you guys stroll out of the book den. I want to once again thank you, Meg. That was such an absolute blast. Yeah, that was so much fun.
That was cool.
Oh my gosh, that was so much fun.
We just got to get David a soundboard so we can do that again.
I know, right? Oh my gosh. So, yeah, the book den, guys, check it out. It's a zine. It's got all sorts of, you know, the tables filled with different books. I've used a lot of them here in the podcast, which has been really, really cool to just whip this out and have these because it just helps to flavor your world in a huge way. And we're scratching the surface here. There's a lot of secrets to be found. What's going on with Penny? What's behind that door? Where'd you get all these books? Where are they storing them? Who's Dewey?
Who is Dewey?
Find out by grabbing your copy of the book den today.
Hashtag who is Dewey.
Hashtag who is Dewey.
yeah, that's from our friend Meg at Hungry Familiar.
Yes.
She's all over social media. You can find her on our page if you follow us.
If you're really lucky, she'll teach you how to play Pathfinder.
Yeah, exactly. See you like every fourth Monday night.
Yeah, when our schedules miraculously align. Oh, beautiful. Okay. And with that, you leave the book den behind.
Blanche is coming back later for scrolls. Penny, what time do you close?
He just, the door opens, the closed sign comes out. It closes. David closed his audio file folder. Yeah. The shop's closed now.
Must be time for a siesta.
Must be. Ooh. Ooh.
Some like singing bowl shit.
I don't think we need to focus on the immediate scenes that follow this, right? You return to Xena's. You enjoy a slow, slow roasted goat.
Man, that was a sexy goat.
Oh, man. It is like crisp black burnt when you get it. Xena's been kind of just roasting it for the last hour while you've been away.
Wow. Goat chips.
And you all kind of split that. Everyone eating it while she watches. Perhaps like she just wants to sort of hang out. And it's like, Xena, we have things we have to, is there any way we can, Xena, actually, we got this book for you, and hands over, The Moon in My Hands, and Xena just kind of, oh my goodness, I've been reading so long, oh, thank you, just snatches it up and kind of scurries off to read. She flies down. You hear like a comet like smash somewhere on the other side of the place, where she probably landed in one of those broken sofas we've talked about.
Blanche, as politely as she can, picks up her napkin and deposits whatever is left in her mouth into the napkin.
Jules is loving it. It's food.
Arlon was doing one of those, like holding it up and turning his head sideways.
It's like and just dropping
mouth.
It behind his shoulder.
Very delicious, Mother. Thank you, Mother. We will get takeout later.
She is a very sweet lady.
Very sweet. She is what she is. Good woman, but
she should be locked out of a kitchen, though.
Yes, it's strange. I remember growing up, she was different. She didn't collect like this. Back when me and Zeb were young, she was... Well, people change over time. He kind of looks down towards those books, and Fibro's just, like, hungry for them. He's just, like, hands are sort of shaking.
No, I was just going to ask, did something change her?
You ask Arhan?
Hmm?
Something. Yeah. Blinks. No. No, nothing. No.
Can I roll something on that?
Yeah, roll something on that.
What you want?
Give me, ooh, insight.
Okay. 18.
He's not lying, but he did think of something, and then he forgot. In that instant, he forgot. We talked about this before. There's these strange things happening, and actually, I feel like I should talk about it with you guys, too, because I didn't really bring this up. I think it is important. You all looked at those files. You all saw that line about Eitzman noting down on sort of paper, Zebulon. He was sired by Calypsonia's mate, but he couldn't remember anything about Zebulon's father. And it's like he wrote this down in a blur really fast before something happened. Once those files were down, like Arhlan had a full panic attack. Something happened to him there. And once those files were put away, you also don't, you remember the panic attack. You don't remember what caused it. You don't remember that line. You don't remember anything about that. Like, it just slips away.
That's okay. Sometimes things that happen in our childhood, it's tough to remember them.
Yes. Yes, yes, of course. Yes. But that's a matter for a different time now.
Now, the books, please, please, can we get to the books? I'm sorry, this is all fascinating stuff, but that is more fascinating stuff.
Okay, Fibro, why don't you walk us through exactly what we're looking at here?
All right. We've been doing a lot of research, right? We're focusing on books, basically, sources that lead us to speak of two different things, two major factors that our research is taking us to right now. And I will get to why we're looking into these things, but first, I need you to help us look into these, okay? Now, what we're looking into are legends and lore, as old as we can get, about the deities of our various worlds, and any mentions, and he looks to you, Jules, of strange giant fossils in connection with miracles and supernatural events. Now, these books here should have a lot for us. Me and Arhlan, we're going to dive in. We're going to start reading. We're going to put our notes down. If anyone wants to join us, it's a battle of its own, right?
I do have advantage on investigation with my spectacles, so perhaps I can help.
You do indeed.
Strange giant fossils.
Yes.
Wasn't there something that was...
You've had multiple.
This is Jeremy talking.
Yes. No, this is good. Talk. This is where we're going to get into the meat of things.
Wasn't the entire citadel on a giant fossil or made up of a giant fossil?
It is indeed. There is one strange giant fossil.
Huh.
Let's keep going. Can you think of another one from our story?
They all over the place.
That's the only one I can think of. I'm assuming
there was a fossil in the mine of San Sation that Paul called upon.
Me say it.
Sorry, yes. There's one more.
And there is one more wherever Jules was being held when he was being tortured or whatever.
Yeah.
The Tower of Authority, Pillar of Authority, was built with these giant fossils. When you were given your powers, your Shadow Touch powers, when that demonic influence was placed in you, your hand was driven over the point of a fossilized claw in the uppermost reaches of the tower. There was a piece of this fossil that during an incident with Dresden got embedded into him, and it gave him this strange power. He made a wish in that moment to protect Jules, to turn people away. And in that moment, suddenly this power developed in him that could give him a distraction, that could create this echo, as if some great power responded to his wish.
I've just got one question after that.
Yeah.
This is for both me and Steven, actually.
Yeah.
Button?
At this point, one button, you guys can choose who gets it between the two.
Oh,
teams.
My God.
Yeah.
Quick roll off?
Sure.
Fuck it.
I'll roll a die. Tree.
Mine didn't go through.
That counts a zero.
Natural one.
Oh my goodness, how did I win with a three?
How did you win with a three? Take that button.
Because
I'm almost at the max. One. I'm going to cap out.
So yes, the Citadel itself, I was wondering if you would grab that onto that.
Oh, fuck yeah. That's the only one that I could remember.
We'll circle back to that.
Man, I deserved that button because I remembered all three.
You did. Hey, good stuff. You guys want to start reading?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love for our characters to read.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, let's do some reading. I'm not going to make you roll investigation, actually.
What the hell?
No, because honestly, at this point, yours is high enough, your passive would annihilate.
Okay, sure, gotcha.
This.
Talking about reading the book?
Yeah.
It's literally written down.
It's more going to be like speed-based, right? Like finding things fast. Okay, but okay. I mean, like honestly, you're going to do this fast. You're going to be able to do this pretty quick. It's going to take a couple days still of like kind of going back, hanging out here. We see a montage of reading, sleeping, reading. Perhaps Jules returns to the coyote at night, but Blanche is just like with her glasses just passing out. Maybe go back to the pale moonlight and sleep.
Well, hang out. Jules isn't going back to the coyote to sleep. He's drinking.
He's going back to the coyote.
He's going back to the coyote for a couple drinks.
He's just been reading books all day. Yeah. Yeah. And so you read. Time passes. Notes are etched. Various like strings are added to the conspiracy board and different things written down. Pages are sort of taken on there. Actually, they're not written pages of the books. That'd be horrifying. You'd be killed.
They're Xeroxed.
So let's talk about.
Oh, man.
Let's take it in turn. We'll start with mentions of fossils. We'll move on from there.
You want to know what Steven's interested in?
What?
Mentions of turquoise.
Ooh.
Tears of the Dragon. A book about the founding of the Shrine of Storms on the island nation of Umizu, which is also the world of Umizu. Basically, the world of Mizu is one great island surrounded by water until it hits the edges of that world's sort of ethereal barrier. You read that a great draconic sage once lived amongst the people of Umizu, ruling them and caring for them all. The sage's spirit after death lingers ever in its grave, the Shrine of Storms, causing the world to ever mourn their death. Thus you have the long seasons of rain. Modern depictions of this being portray it in the form of a dragon turtle, but buried deeper in histories of Umizu, one might find the sage portrayed as a fish-like serpent. It is mentioned in some places, like very like vague references, that the bones of this being, of this great sage, rest within the Shrine of Storms. And there is a poem that like kind of ends off this book. The final line, when translated to Cid El Common, reads, "Its bones, black and diamond strong, its tethered soul, an ever-swirling storm."
Cool. So that's the body and that's the soul.
What you got? What you got, Jeremy?
Okay. Yeah, okay. First thought that came to mind was the maw.
The maw? Or do you mean the maw? The maw?
Not on...
Below the citadel?
Yes.
The keening gloom.
Right, the keening gloom.
Yeah, the storm.
Yes, the storm.
Yep.
Beneath the citadel.
Also...
Take a button, sir.
His luminary name, too. That's quite interesting.
Speak of the Storm Eye?
Yeah.
The Storm Eye, who now is the keeper of the Shrine of Storms, or at least it was before things happened. This is a very, very sacred place. Very few are allowed to really kind of free roam in there. You read that. Moving on. In the world of Dialogon, I definitely said that super wrong. I am so sorry. Dialogon. The sky bridges there, one of the famous marks of this world, are various islands connected by these grand, almost serpentine bridges that seem to weave like a moving snake, right? These sky bridges, maintained by an order known as the Bone Singers, are made with fossilized, great black fossilized bones sort of embedded within the stone, much like they were on Tythos in the towers. The latent magic of the fossils apparently feed into the stones and allows them to shape to impossible forms and stand ever against the ravages of time. Again, just like the towers, too tall to make sense, and yet maybe there was some magic pulsing through them, something very powerful, very potent. It actually goes on. There's actually a lot of lore surrounding the creature in Dialogon. These beings that these bones are made of are referred to as the ancient Bakunawa. Apparently, serpents of their ilk can still be found rarely on the world, though they're much smaller cousins of the grand serpents of legend, which were seen as gods to the people way, way back before history really was written.
So, sorry, this is my just random crackpot conspiracy theorist mind. I mean, the way that you just described everything, I'm having a thought of, like, there was something or a bunch of somethings that at one point just completely exploded and separated.
Right, yeah. The body is the Concord yes. Worlds. Yeah, and exactly. The soul is the Keening Gloom.
Exactly.
So what happens when everything follows Tythos into the Keening Gloom and everything is together once together. Again?
Yeah.
What I do for Shadra Khan.
Mm-hmm.
What is Shadra Khan? Do you know?
I mean, I'm guessing it's the place that the worlds are going when they fall in, or are they pulled into the Keening Gloom?
Mm-hmm.
We'll get back to that. Another small reference you find is in that book, Climbing the Mountain, written by Fai Mamoun. It talks about how Fai Mamoun, upon reaching the mountain's top, discovered a black fossil jutting out from the top, which he communed with, which allowed him to perform this incredible magic, raising up the land around it, which tracks with everything you know about Mazir Drakhan. Paul used the fossil, channeled through the fossil. Crispin used the fossil. This power, you're starting to realize, these Mazir Drakhan, these people, what they are, people who can speak to and communicate with whatever dead beings these are, beings that's souls, that's magical sort of energy seem to linger within their corpses long after death. That's mostly what you read on as far as the fossils go, but there's more to read. As Fabro pointed out, he wanted you to read about the various deities of the worlds. You start off with Song of Our Deliverance. It's a scroll from God's Breath, and it's basically a very, very early, early, early piece of the Awakening Song. There's a copy of it, but even the copies of this thing are like old and ancient because it's very hard to find them. Mostly these things end up like in like the, you know, on God's Breath himself, where the proclaimers. Oh my gosh, I remember that. The proclaimers that
take the war, a button.
They take care of them. Now the Covenant Gods, you know, historically saved the Godsfolk from obliteration by some forgotten enemy and brought them to the world of God's Breath where they could live in peace. Though we've seen that this peaceful land has hardly remained so over time. The Covenant Gods are described, and we said this before, as being very tall and thin, typically depicted as large humanoids. But the last line in the song is very interesting. New hills to grow, safe from strife and sin, our gods did fly, twisting on new wind. A strange way to describe a humanoid's movements.
Maybe more draconic.
Maybe more draconic.
Or angelic.
Or angelic. Oh. It could be.
Oh.
But as you think about this, you think of like the, you imagine this, you hear about these serpentine forms that have been referenced before, right?
Yeah.
And like memories begin to flash. Things not found in the pages of these books, but found within the depths of your mind and your experiences as you've traveled these worlds. Pieces of a puzzle you did not know you were putting together. You did not know you were solving. Jules. When you save Jean Franklin from the spiders on Danitu, you remember a cave shrine with a luminescent wall painting of some massive rainbow serpent on Danitu. You remember your journey with your friend and former sail sleigh racing companion, Tonya, a.k.a. Radicalize, introducing you to Paraka, the secret Piscean serpentine draconic god of Arnakek beneath the windless lake under the ice, this dead form, but still fully formed in a storm thundering around it, buried deep within the ice. And as these things sort of like, you know, hit you, other connections begin to form, connections that may very well rattle your perception of these worlds. You think about Moreno? Is it Moreno? The church estate in San Sebastian?
That sounds right.
I believe it's...
There was Moreno, right. There was Rosas.
It's Moreno then, yeah. So yeah. Moreno was this estate that was turned into his makeshift church to La Katrina. And you remember seeing that image on the wall of this woman, like very like dark woman, sort of standing over this entire room. But you remember clearly that there was a serpent coiled around her neck, a very strange feature that seems to be following that deity all over. You remember there's even talk, maybe if you find this in a book, or Fabro mentioned this, that there's talk that La Katrina still rests, they say, beneath the city of San Sebastian, where the miracle of the Night of the Remembered is most like poignant, where it really, really hits.
And this whole time, Emin Rath has been hunting snake eaters.
Yeah, get it right, Steven. That was
you
good.
You nailed it.
You like that pronunciation?
Snake eaters.
I practice that at night sometimes. And then a wrath.
Ooh. I'm going to give you
that a button.
Sounds
a nice way to relax.
All right. I'm going to give you a button for that, and nice. I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
You maybe mentioned this, like, as you're kind of looking at the board.
I'm maxed, by the way.
Oh, you're maxed. Okay, good to know.
Max button.
I was going to say, we are back to three, right?
Yes, yeah, back to three max. Okay. You say this, and like you're putting on the board, and Fibro looks up and even says, "That's fascinating. I was doing a lot of translation work on the phrase Shadra Khan and whatever sort of ancient languages comes from, which we still don't really know exactly where the source is, or at least we think we know," and looks to Arhalon, who nods. "But the word Drakan as a separate entity could mean many things. There are many cultures where it was, its translation would be snake."
Hmm.
"Perhaps even that name is derived from something so much older. I didn't think you'd see that connection." Good shit, Steven.
There's snakes everywhere.
You should give
me the button you would have given him. That way we're both max.
Or honestly, what you can say is, I would give you a button, because that's going to give me that little dopamine rush. Even if I don't get the button.
I'm going to fuck with you here. Because you're thinking about this. You're thinking about, like, snakes in these various worlds. These grand serpentine fossils that seem now like they're popping up in every world. Mm. In some cases, they are connected to the very deities of those worlds.
Didn't we battle a giant fucking snake, too?
You did.
Yeah, in a mini.
I mean, that's just happenstance. That's cool. But
that was the start of God's Breath, I think, right?
It was God's Breath. And, like, yeah. And not these characters' knowledge, but, like, God's Breath is where Crispin came across something buried deep.
Yes.
Was that perhaps one of the Covenant gods?
Mm.
Where else, Blanche? I'll give Jeremy a button if you can read this one out. Where else would you note a twisting form that may or may not be a god? Perhaps not all fossils are obviously fossils. Perhaps they're buried beneath something else. This is very blink and you'll miss it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Did we see anything under the ground when Crispin did toad form thing? But Blanche wasn't there, so I'm thinking it was something with Blanche, because you said
Blanche centric.
Yeah,
I did say Blanche.
You did say Blanche, huh?
Your investigation's high enough; you'll get this anyway.
Okay.
Do you connect these dots? Do you want to hear You want to hear what I'm going to say,
Steven? I want that last button.
Well, do you have a?
No.
Okay.
I don't.
I just wanted to check.
He's going to say it, and it's going to be like, "Oh my god!" Right. He's going to say,
"Yeah, exactly."
Yeah.
Is there a hint option? Can I phone a friend? I don't have any. I'll give you a hint.
Okay. This is fun. You hear stories, twisting forms with these, like, you hear, like, you know, most of these just draconic sort of mouths and heads, right? Mm-hmm. What would it look like if perhaps on some world, the head and body were somehow separated? Imagine a world where there is this fossil of a grand maw. And elsewhere, something.
Oh yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, the Sahagin, the Maw from fucking We Save People from It.
And not just the Maw, Condorala is a twisting coral reef.
What is the base
of Condorala? Whoa. You think about the form. Condorala takes the strand spire, and you think about it. You're like, that's just like the Citadel.
Sure.
This twisting spiral form wrapping around it. It's like a number of these, like that thing you saw. An Arnakek.
Now the question is,
was Condorala once, like, and the Maw, were they once one being split over time? Perhaps, like, the Maw, which doesn't seem to show any latent, any kind of magic, doesn't hold it, but Condorala, the body, maybe holds some powerful magic still within.
Which is, like, exactly the opposite of how you would guess if a head and body were separated.
You would think
that the mind would be the one that's...
Or perhaps the heart? You can't really say. It's hard to know. Yeah. But, this... You read this and you're like, holy shit.
So the real question, though, is, was that close enough for a button? He got the maw.
Ooh, I got the waffle cone.
I'm going to give you half a button.
Nice.
You have half a button.
That means something to us.
I should be mildly impressed one more time to give you a full button.
I need to be mildly impressed.
Come on, just one give more it to time. You. Everyone thinks I'm soft now. They're like, David's gone soft.
Hey, David.
Pudgy.
David, look
He's
at me.
Weak. That's not impressive.
I was mildly impressed.
Yes, I.
Jeremy hit the gritty.
Yes, I did. I can shimmy too. I can shimmy.
Ooh,
shimmy, shimmy, Cocoa Puffs.
Pass it to me now.
you're starting to gather all this information. You kind of realize all these things, all these pieces coming together. So let me ask you this: what conclusions can you draw from this? different worlds all have these same fossils. Different worlds all have allusions to deities that seem to share commonalities. I
mean, they're all connected in a much bigger way.
Yeah.
Physically and magically.
Yeah. What is Shadrachan?
I mean, the collection of the whole, maybe?
The world of serpents. That's what was translated as. Okay, sure. And you were told before. Is that what, isn't that strange?
What all of this was before? It is what it is?
As you say this, perhaps, Fibro and Arhalon look to each other and smile. Take this button.
Oh!
You were told long ago, Shadrachan is supposed to be the world of spirits. But it made no sense because the spirits lived among the people in Subsunko.
Mm.
So that means Shadrachan ought to be the same world.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize now how there was no contradiction there. Because every world is Shadrachan.
Yeah.
Fibro will go in to sort of fill you in on more. Part of what got them into this, learning this, looking into the grand histories of all worlds, no world's actual defined history goes beyond 1,000 years ago. They all tend to linger around between 850 and sort of 980 years, basically. Like something, it seems like every world had something happen that kind of started the actual major recorded written history. Some grand event, perhaps a war, perhaps a natural cataclysm, but something occurred in history for every world began around that 1,000-year mark.
I mean, given that, you know, like you just explained how this world is the same as the country, it's like an island nation sort of thing.
Yeah.
Given that these are all these concords are, it seems like they're a piece of a whole. Yeah. So, I mean, it seems like 1,000 years ago is when they split.
Mm-hmm.
And you said a very interesting thing earlier.
Sorry, no, you continue, then I'll say what I'm going to say.
You said a very interesting thing earlier about what happens when you go through the Keen and Gloom.
Right.
Do you go back?
Yes.
To form into the whole.
Huh.
A very weird, very strange thought. I won't say if it's right or not, I'll say it's interesting.
So, and then my stupid brain now is sitting here wondering, everybody who's living right now, it almost seems to me like we have two separate groups of people. Groups that know this history, and whether they're trying to avoid going back to it or trying to get back to it. And then maybe we have another group who don't give a shit about that, but just want to harness that power and take that power and use it for something new.
I mean, one thing hits you here for sure as you hear this, the idea that you can't be the only ones that have stumbled upon this. People have had to discover this before. So why isn't this out there? Why doesn't the world know? People are stopping this. Like you said, there are people controlling this information. Why?
Well,
why?
Ozen certainly has heard of it. And why would Ozen want to bring back the world of serpents? That can't be a better existence for us, right? For our world now.
Do any of us really know anything about that, though?
Fibro, do we know what it was like?
He shakes his head. The whatever readings we can find that speak of before, there's so few, almost nothing that speaks of before this 1,000 years, whatever happened pre this time. But they don't reference evil. Dialon, they worshipped the great serpents, the Bakunawa. They were good. I mean, we've only had good experiences with the deities of old, right? All of them, even the ones we don't have any evidence for, such as the Sunweaver, still revered now, even though the Sunweaver has not, I guess, lingered upon the worlds in so long.
Well, we know that less than savory things can be done in his name, and, well, it seems that some of these ancient powers can be harnessed for evil. Is that not right, Jules?
Yeah, I know that firsthand.
Is the insinuation that this world of serpents was somehow without evil?
I suppose our quest continues, for we do not know everything. But there is one thing I found very interesting. You asked why someone would want to return things to the way they were. So I ask you, Blanche Trudeau, you are studied in magic in the planar arts. What would happen if a world was broken in some strange way? Its pieces in the material plane
split apart, its fragments dislocated from their set planar location in space.
Well, I suppose if...
You can also roll for this, too.
If what was left had any notion of what's going on at all, that it would try to pull itself back together, wouldn't it?
Perhaps. And I theorize a little deeper on that, too. Think, what would happen if these pieces, pulled from where they're supposed to be, are invading where they are not supposed to be, dislocated against the borders of the other planes? Shadowfell, the Feywild, the Fugue Plane, the Demonic Abyss, the Celestial Planes, the Elemental.
Retaliation by whoever's space they were invading.
Retaliation or absorption. And it hits you again.
Planar absorption.
The theory of planar absorption.
Fuck.
And think about that. All these worlds that face these mysterious crises, Arnakek with the Everwinds, the Plane of Wind, God's Breath with the Rattle, Shadowfell, Denitu with the spiders, also Shadowfell. All these worlds will see supernatural miracles, Tythos with its incredible abundance of valuable gemstones, the Plane of Earth, Sansa Tion with its residents returning from death, the Fugue Plane.
There's an entire war happening all around us.
Every world faces certain doom. Eventually, when they are pulled into a place they are not supposed to be. That looks to Arhlon, who like nods, kind of gulps this.
That is our theory, yes. That.
Kind of slams a fist against the board, or the piercing board of the wall.
That is what we must fight to stop. That and so much else. You see it now, right? This is big. This is huge. Yet we cannot go forward with this, right? We can't tell anybody. They will come after us. I don't know who they are, though I suspect...
Kyle stops.
I suspect Grandmother's a part of it.
What do you suspect her aims are? Sholei can't possibly wish to see planar absorption run through its path and see the dissolution of these worlds. Can she?
I don't know.
She must be working to stop it, right? Maybe she can help us.
Grandmother's ambitious.
Maybe we can help her.
I believe she has the good of the worlds at heart, but she will do dark things. I know she will do dark things if she thinks they are right.
To what end?
But can you remind me of what we know about, if anything, about their father?
That's the thing. You only know that you can't... It's like something is stopping you from remembering it.
Okay.
As players, you remember the line that Itzman wrote that said, what did Sholei do?
Right. Okay.
But as characters,
just,
that's gone.
There was just my thought, because Sholei seems like she knows everything.
I'm going to take that thought and continue it on.
Okay.
There's a reason why Sholei thinks that might seem like she knows everything, because Sholei, it's buried in lore. It's very important. Sholei's the one that discovered the Citadel. She founded it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because she came to discover a certain group. Beings that may hold all of the arcane and planar knowledge of all this world.
Okay.
Do you remember what those beings are, gentlemen?
I remember, I know.
It was through a turquoise stone, wasn't it?
I know exactly.
A turquoise stone, which would be connected to... perhaps?
The dude that was in... The guys that we went to see. You said their names earlier.
You got it.
You said their names earlier.
The Incarnates.
The Incarnates, yes.
The Incarnates.
So...
And Blanche... You just became a luminary by custom.
Oh.
You're supposed to meet with one of those guys,
nice,
aren't you?
Nice.
Yeah.
I guess my next question then is, this lore, did it come from Sholei or an outside party?
That's hard to say.
Okay.
There's so much still to figure out. So much still to learn. What does it all have to do with Ozen, who seemed to know this, that line, what I do for Shadra Khan? It seems to imply that Ozen knew everything.
Mm-hmm.
But when
did he? Or at least more. Yeah.
Now.
Ozen knows something, Jules. And I have to find out what it is. We have to find out what it is.
I go wherever you go.
Cool.
If I may.
The coolest thing that Blanche has ever said.
Let me take that line to use as a transition, a voiceover echoing. Say it again. But this time do like a cool like, go.
Yeah, make it cooler. Yeah.
Do that.
What did I say?
I go wherever you go.
Go.
Yeah.
I go wherever you go. Go.
And we cut to the sand, or to inside of the Radiant... Shut up, it's cool. Cut to the inside of the Radiant Citadel proper, the preserve of the ancestors, this grand sort of natural display, an amalgamation of the climates of all the worlds, perhaps a microcosm of what Shadra Khan once was. What are the incarnates so close to it now? It's all coming together and you are standing here, maybe at the end, within this sort of miniature salt marsh up against a grand sort of ocean. It's just moving into like this sort of a bay. It's very, very hot where you stand, very tropical. And you stand upon white, pristine beaches, very similar to those of the Golden Bay, looking out. And then with a crashing of water... A grand beast made of bastite gemstones, sort of red, mottled with bits of mossy green. A great caiman, much like Tikalosh, rises up and faces you. The sound of a low storm rumbling in the air around. And we will see you all in episode 100, because we'll call it there!